This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I am Don LaGreca. Monday means the great EJ Raddick. Hi, EJ. How are you?
Hello, Don. How are you today?
Good. Of course, you see him on NHL Now from 4 to 6 Eastern on the NHL Network, and plenty to get into. But I want a feel-good story because I don't know how many people out there have like any kind of positive or negative feelings towards the Vancouver Canucks, but everything they've gone through, not playing in nearly a month, maybe starting too early, JT Miller showing some leadership, they come back from 2-0 down last night, and they get a big overtime victory over the Toronto Maple Leafs. I had to make you feel good because it's been a long, tough month in Vancouver for the Canucks.
Yeah, it's a great story in terms of the, you know, their perseverance and their battle in that game. You're right. It's been a rough several weeks for the Canucks, by all accounts, dealing with the Brazilian variant of the COVID virus that knocked a lot of those guys and members of their staff, members of their family for quite a loop. Luckily, by all accounts, people have come out the other end. Hopefully, everyone involved with them, and that includes their family, is going to be okay and get through. But we got back to the Canucks got back on the ice and playing probably the best team, at least on paper, in the North, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and the Canucks were able to rally and win the game in overtime, and just a terrific performance by Braden Holtby, and one of the saves for the ages that he was able to make on a puck from Wayne Simmonds, kind of a double windmill save with the pads, and reminded me about Braden Holtby making that great save in the Cup Final just a couple of years ago against the Vegas Golden Knights when he stopped Alex Tuck late in that game to preserve a victory for the Capitals. So Holtby was terrific, and good to see the Canucks back on the ice, and we'll see where they go from here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a reminder too, and we've talked about it on this podcast numerous times, that you don't know where this COVID thing is going to go, and Colorado's going through it now. They're going to have three postponements, and we'll see what this turns out to be. But, it kind of just gives you that accurate feeling of what's going on here with Vancouver, because it's not just an inconvenience, right? From a sports perspective, it's like, oh, COVID, postponements, contact tracing. Over the last 13 months, EJ, that's kind of just become noise, and you kind of forget that it's an illness. And that 21 yeah. Canucks had it, and several of them had it bad, including their head coach, Travis Green. So it's not just a stat. It's not just an inconvenience of games not being played and our sport being taken away from us. These are human lives going through a lot. And obviously, from a professional athlete standpoint, their chances of survival are outstanding and recovering is great. But the fact is that for several weeks, guys were really, really sick. And we can't forget that this virus actually does a lot of devastation to the body, more than just the inconvenience of postponing games.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, hey, listen, Donnie, just go back 100 years into history with the Spanish flu epidemic. I mean, there was some, if you know your hockey history, there was a hockey player that was that passed away due to the Spanish flu. So it's not inconceivable that a modern athlete could go through something similar to that. So, I mean, fortunately, that has not been the case. But you're right. I mean, I guess we as, as people who cover sports and those fans who follow it, you do sometimes get caught up in the, when are they going to get back out there kind of mentality. And the reality is they're going through something very, very difficult. I went through it. I was fortunate. I had mild symptoms, but I had really a lot of anxiety, and it affected me in a different way. And so we've seen how this affects people in different ways, and I just hope that all the people, again, and including the staff and including the family members that are there, hopefully everybody comes out of this okay, because it can do a number on you for sure, as we've seen.
All right, plenty of places to go, including the Islanders, who really struggled to score goals, EJ, but they're finding ways to win. Last night you saw them win in overtime against Philadelphia, and it's it's worrisome in the sense that, are they going to come up a goal short in the postseason, right? Are they going to be a team that, because their offense isn't maybe going to be matched by some of the teams they're going to face, that they're going to come up a goal short? But on the glass half full side, the way the goaltending is played, the way the system is played, they don't need as many goals. And when you see this run they're on, how productive they've been with a minimal amount of goals. So how do you look at it, coming up a goal short in the playoffs, or this is exactly how you want to be once you get to the playoffs?
Well, I think the Otters want to find a way to score a few more goals. I think that, you know, you play a Philadelphia Flyers team that really hasn't been lauded for its great defensive play in the last several weeks. And, you know, they played a number of tight games with the Flyers. It's kind of amazing. I think, like, more than half of their games have gone to overtime or shootouts. So, but still, I think you'd like to find a way to score some more goals. You know, the competition is not going to get any easier when, if things go as they expect and get to the playoffs. I mean, if you've got to get into a showdown with Washington, Pittsburgh, or Boston, you're going to need to find a way to score a few goals. So, you know, a few more goals. The defense has been good. The goaltenders have been good. But, I do think that's a little bit of a concern. But, I also think it's somewhat secular as well. During the course of a season, we've seen different teams go through that. And, the Otters are trying to work two forwards in. They're still, they're without their captain, who was a pretty important offensive force for them, and he's out for the season. So I think, like everybody else, these four teams in the East that we think are going to be in the playoffs, they all have their strengths and weaknesses. And, I think that the Islanders are going to have to find ways to get a little more offense as they move forward, because it won't be easy if you're in a seven-game series with any of those three teams.
No, and you know what? The Rangers didn't get any help, obviously, from the Islanders with those losses to the Bruins. And the Ranger fans were watching that game against the Flyers last night, hoping if the Islanders had lost EJ in regulation, there'd be only 6 points separating the Rangers and the Islanders with the two teams having to play three more times. I mean, so it's scary. It's scary for really all those teams, because the Rangers have put a lot of pressure with those four straight wins against New Jersey. And I know the Devils right now are basically a glorified AHL team, but to be able to win four straight in the way they did was pretty good. And Boston's now rebounded now. They look good. Tuukka Rask back into the fold, getting a little bit healthier. Time might run out for these Rangers, but clearly these teams have to continue to play, not just for the battle for first place, but any kind of slip. You know, this Rangers team putting a lot of pressure on them. The playoffs are certainly not guaranteed to teams like the Bruins and the Islanders, for sure.
No, I agree, and you're right. The Rangers do have those three games to the Islanders, and, it makes it even more that game they played last week when I thought the Rangers had the better of the play for 40 minutes, and the game went to overtime, and the Islanders were able to find a way to win that game in overtime. That's even more a reminder of, how tight things are and how, that single point could end up making a difference, because the Rangers are playing very well. Now, I don't know if they're going to be able to run the table and win the rest of their games, on the schedule, but certainly they can make it uncomfortable for teams. And, the bad news for the Rangers is that the Boston Bruins, post-trade deadline have really they have really rounded into form again. And 4-0 since the addition of Taylor Hall. That line of Krejci, Hall, and Smith has been terrific to go behind the perfection line. They've got pretty good, when you think about being able to play like a Charlie Coyle on the third line and a Jake DeBrusk, and, as you're back and forwards, all of a sudden those guys are better slotted. And if they can get Carlo and Grizzly back, they got Rask back in the mix now. I mean, the Boston Bruins could end up a team that is really dangerous to play in the postseason, if they get there. And I'm going to guess they're going to, because, I just think they look that team with those moves, even the addition of Mike Riley from Ottawa, it just gives that team a lot more depth. They have a different look now that they have a really significant second line, something that they've been looking for a long time. It looks like they have that in place now.
Yeah, and look, Rangers kind of look like, EJ, the team from last year before the pandemic hit, where they were playing great hockey, but you just had the feeling they were still going to run out of time and not make it. And it has that same feeling, like they'll close out the season well, give you a reason to believe for next year. but just not have enough time. And listen, we're both David Quinn defenders, and I think he's done a terrific job. I think people don't pay attention to some of the adversity the Rangers had faced with all of the injuries and the absences during the course of the year. But scholarship will be over next year, right? I mean, if you've got a healthy Panarin, a healthy Zibanejad, you've got Shesterkin playing well, it's going to be very difficult to just settle for good but no playoffs next year. I think if they close out these final 11 games, make it or not, but play well, clearly next year expectations, and rightfully so, will be playoffs or bust. Is that fair?
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought this year they were a year, at least a year away, and I got to tell you, I mean, what I've seen in the last couple of weeks, I mean, with Zibanejad finding his game again, and you know, you go back to our original conversation about COVID, right? I mean, there was a guy that just wasn't the same for several weeks. And then all of a sudden, you know, the light switch came back on, and he's been unbelievable. He has 30 points in his last 20 games. I mean, over the course of an 82-game season, Donnie, that would be more than 120 points.
Yeah.
In a season. So, I mean, it was him and Panarin have been lighting it up, and the young players that they have, that we all know they're going to be good players. I mean, Kako and Lafreniere, and now Kravtsov, and you know, even somebody like Vucinovich, who had a good weekend, had the hat trick on his birthday on Saturday. You know, like, he almost gets lost in the shuffle, but he's becoming a really good player. And you know, Fox on the blue line, and Miller, and they've got other guys on the blue line that are coming. The Zach Jones has just signed from UMass. They've got the Schneider kid. They've got other kids over in Europe. I mean, they are really gonna. They are loaded with really talented players within their organization. The key will be, is how does Jeff Gorton, you know, and company sort it out and figure out who they need, you know, who is staying and who eventually might have to be moved to add a piece that helps you win. So, you know, it'll be very interesting to watch the Rangers over the next several years. I'm with you. I think they're going to run out of runway this year just based on the math, but I would say that the expectations are going to be sky high moving forward, and that's going to be something else they're going to have to manage.
Yeah, there's no question. And Panarin, listen, I'm biased because I get to see him every single day. You know, you remove that leave of absence that he took when he missed 10, 11 games, whatever it ended up being.
Yeah.
You know, we're talking about one of the leading scorers in the league. I mean, he's just captivating to watch. And, you know, he maybe gets lost in the shuffle because of, you know, the Rangers not being a playoff team in the span of time in which he's been here. And he's got to share a lot of spotlight with, you know, Mika Zibanejad. It's been really good. But I tell you, Panarin's right there among the best of the league. And for a winger, for the vision that he has, he makes players around him better. Tremendous shot, tremendous passing ability. I mean, this guy, he is every bit the player that they thought they were going to get, maybe more.
Yeah, he's one of the best free agent signings that I can remember in terms of, like, big-time money signing. And yet, he's lived up to that and more, to your point. I mean, he has just been lights out good. And it really does make you wonder. You go all the way back to when he was a member of the Chicago Blackhawks. It just makes you wonder why they didn't try to figure out a way to keep him long-term. I mean, I know they got scared off 2 years prior to the end of his contract. They got scared off by the potential of losing him. They traded him to Columbus. But, you know, a player that is this talented, like you said, I mean, he is in the top handful of players in the league. You do wonder why maybe Chicago shouldn't have tried to figure out a way to make that work. In the end, they didn't. He went to Columbus and then subsequently signed with the Rangers as a free agent. And they're paying him an awful lot of money for a long time. But right now, I mean, he has been terrific, and I don't see any reason to think that he's going to slow down in the near future.
And Adam Fox, I know it's a reputation thing, so he's got a lot to overcome to get serious consideration for the Norris Trophy. But when you think about it, he's a plus 20, which is better than the other candidates. He's got more assists than any defenseman. He's right there in total points. And he's on a team that's not as good as Tampa, not as good as Florida. Not, you know, maybe Chikrin obviously is a guy that's going to get consideration on maybe a non-playoff team in Arizona, but tell me why Fox shouldn't get serious consideration for the Norris.
I can tell you that, because he should get serious consideration for the Norris. And, I mean, it's two different questions, Don, right? If you're deciding your Norris vote based on, like, who is the best player to help you win right now and who impacts the game in so many different ways, it's hard to look past Victor Hedman, right? Because he's 6'6", he skates like the wind. I mean, he's already been a Conn Smythe Trophy winner and a Norris Trophy winner, and he's just a terrific player. And it's hard to think there's anybody that impacts the game more than a guy like that. Now, if you look at it like most years, when the writers, and it's the Professional Hockey Writers Association who votes on the Norris Trophy, when they look at it and they look at the numbers, I mean, Fox has quite a case to win the Norris this year. So I think he's, at worst, a finalist.
Yeah.
I can see some people putting him on top their ballot. Now, again, and this is a problem that we have in the league this year, is that every division, it's, you know, you play only in that division. And that's nobody's fault. That's not the Rangers' fault, Fox's fault. It's just like it's not Connor McDavid's fault that he gets to play, you know, the Ottawa Senators this year like 9 or 10 times, and they've really did a number on Ottawa, and he's been able to pile up points against a rebuilding Ottawa team, although Ottawa's been good against a lot of teams in that division. They just haven't been good against the Oilers. So, you know, some will say, well, you know, Fox and some of the Rangers really rolled up a lot of points in those games against the Philadelphia Flyers when the Flyers were really struggling. But the bottom line is, those are National Hockey League games. All the numbers count. And, you know, there are teams that the Philadelphia Flyers have probably beaten pretty good this year as well. So, you know, I guess, it, again, at the end of the day, Don, it will be about maybe how you think about that award. But if you look at the numbers, it's hard to overlook Adam Fox and his candidacy. And I would say that he will be a finalist for the Norris Trophy this year, if not be the person that ends up winning it.
Yeah. I mean, we can get into that whole game of, oh, you're only playing your own division. They get to beat up the Devils. They get to beat up the Sabres. Yeah. But if anybody's watched those games, and listen, the Devils right now are going through a lot. But if you watch those games, I mean, they came to play.
And yeah, for the most
they were
part.
Undecided in three of those four games. It was up in the air in the third period, and not because the Rangers were playing poorly. It's just, you know, the Devils just aren't they're not good enough. But they come with it. Take a look at the Sabres. What did they do to the Penguins? You know, yep. And then you got Washington with Ovechkin and Backstrom and Pittsburgh. You've got Crosby and Malkin, and you know Boston's got, you know, maybe the best line in hockey. So yeah, you could talk all about beating up on the Devils and the Sabres, but what about the Penguins? What about the Capitals? What about the Islanders and the Bruins? Any of those teams can win the Cup, and nobody would bat an eye. I think Fox is playing in the best division in the NHL.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess, you know, that's one of those things. I think there's good and bad in all these divisions. Like, I kind of like what's going on in the Central right now, too. I think that's a real interesting division, and then the West is kind of real top-heavy if you got to deal with Colorado and Vegas a lot, but you know, I think you can make a case for the East. And as I said, I mean, I think Adam Fox has played very well, and the numbers are there to support his candidacy, and people want to vote him. If they want to vote him to win the Norris Trophy this year, I would absolutely have no issue with that at all. But that said, I think there's a lot of interesting candidates out there. And you brought up Jacob Chychrun. I think he's had a monster year this year in a situation where, you know, that team is in the midst of a battle to make the playoffs in the West. So, I mean, there's several good candidates. And the beauty of this, Don, is there's so many good young defensemen in this game right now. It is really, I don't remember a time when we've had this many talented young defensemen, the Haskinens and the McCars, and, I mean, just go right on through the league. And Adam Fox is another one of those guys. And he's lit it up this year, and the numbers are there to support him. So, like I said, I have no problem with him being a very being a front runner or being at the top of that chart. It's just a matter of how the voters are going to see look at his candidacy, and because he's kind of new on the radar, you know, that sometimes you know, that impacts things. Mm-hmm. But he's been very, very good, and you've had a front row seat.
No, he's been very, very good. Outstanding, even. And maybe, listen, I'm not going to compare him to Brian Leetch just yet. I think they are different types of players, but it's clearly the best defenseman that this team has had since Leetch and Zuboff. And those are the guys that he's being compared to early in his career. A couple of things tonight. Sharks and the Golden Knights. So officially, Patrick Marleau will pass Gordie Howe for games played in the NHL, but you've already given your opinion on that last week. Something that's kind of flown under the radar tonight, The Panthers will play host to the Columbus Blue Jackets, and this will be Keith Yandel's 912th consecutive game. That's two behind Gary Unger for second all-time. He's able to play through into next year. He will play, you know, the most consecutive games of any player in the NHL. And listen, it's not Cal Ripken Jr., but, you know, baseball's not hockey. You know, and he's had to be on different teams, getting traded in the middle of the year. And it's a nice accomplishment what Keith Yandel has done, considering the fact that there was serious consideration he was going to be a healthy scratch when the season started.
That's correct, yeah. I mean, listen, anybody who can play in this league, to play as long as Marlowe or to play as in consecutive games to the level that Yandel has done, I mean, it's pretty difficult to do it because it's a physical game, and these guys take a beating over the course of time. And, you know, I talked about it last week on our show on NHL Now. It's just, got to take a moment and really credit these players. I mean, they are playing like every other night, 3 games in 5 days, 4 games in 6 days, whatever. You know, I think Montreal's on a stretch where they're going to play 5 games in 8 days. I mean, this is a grind of a schedule right now. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, I just got to give these players, you know, and the coaches and the staffs, everybody involved, a lot of credit, because this is not an easy game to play night after night after night.
No, it's a bear for sure. And you're starting to see it too, right? That second of back-to-backs, Montreal played Ottawa. It didn't like Montreal had anything. They don't want to take anything away from the Senators, but they had played the night before against the Flames. And you're starting to see that. You know, if you're a betting person, take a look at how many games a team has played in a week, because there's going to be those games where they're just not going to have anything. And if you're taking on a team that maybe has had a couple of days off or a little well-rested, and some of these teams that are out of it that, you know, aren't feeling that tension, that grind, because they know that their season's going to end when the regular season is over, there's probably value in some of those picks, because you can just see that there are some teams that are really sucking wind and it affects their play.
Yeah, no question. And, you know, and a team like, you know, teams right now, like when you talk about, you know, looking for value in terms of betting, is like Buffalo is playing way better right now. So they're not as easy and out as they were 4 weeks ago. The Detroit Red Wings are playing very competitively, and they've added some pieces to their lineup. They made some changes. So they're a team, like on a night-to-night basis, a little harder to deal with. The Ottawa Senators, they're adding new guys all the time. And just shout out to Shane Pinto, a Long Island kid who was at North Dakota. He left school, signed with the Ottawa Senators. He was part of Team USA at the World Juniors a couple of years ago, and I happen to know the family, and I'm really excited for them. But his first game was Saturday, and he had an assist in the game. And the Senators have added a tremendous number of really talented, very young players that on any given night, you know, they can beat you, and we've seen that. I mean, they toasted the Canadiens the other night, and you're right, the Canadiens just didn't look like they had a lot in the tank. So there's a lot of interesting propositions when you think about, you know, the world of betting and these teams right now, because there are tired teams out there, and as much as you think, oh, a team is going to win tonight, sometimes it's just they don't have the gas.
All right, you want to do some tweets before we get out of Dodge here?
Let's do it.
All right, Ozzy says, of all the players in the change of scenery column, who do you think can benefit most? I have a strong feeling Montour in Florida.
Well, I think the one that, you know, I've seen so far that really has been good has been Taylor Hall.
Yeah.
Because and it's really about the fit for Taylor Hall. I mean, the fit has been just perfect. And we thought that was a possibility going into it, but you know, he has just been, it's been a perfect fit there with, you know, David Krejci is such a good player. He's probably one of those guys that's really underappreciated in this league because he's behind the Bergerons and the Marchands and the Pasternak there and Chara for a long time and McAvoy and Rask. But one of the constants in the Bruins' success over the last decade has been David Krejci. And when he is going, the Bruins are going. And right now, he's got some help there with Hall and with Smith and you know, Hall coming in there. Like I said, it's just been a really good fit for him. So that's the one that I think, you know, jumps out to me just because the fit is perfect.
And, you know, Mantha's been good in Washington since the deal. And you knew that was going to be the case. He's a good player for sure. Shining Wizards, Kevin, how patient do Devil fans need to be with this seemingly endless rebuild?
Well, I think they just have to be patient because, you know, it is what it is. I mean, they were missing their captain and a really good young player, and he's here for most of the year. He's back now, so, I mean, that's been a real problem for them. They've traded away, a couple of guys as they continue to try to rebuild that group. So they're down a couple of important forwards in Palmieri and Zajac. They have Brat and Jasper Bratt and... and Pavel Zacha out of the lineup. They've been really good players for them, so that hurts their team as well. So it's just going to take time, and, they've got a couple of guys within their group, too, who are kind of placeholders, older players for, that will be replaced down the road by younger guys. So, I mean, you know, it's been a good year for Ty Smith on defense. I think he's been a very helpful player for them at this point, and they've got other guys coming, and Jack Hughes is improving, and he sure hopefully will stay healthy. And
yeah.
So I think I'm confident that Tommy Fitzgerald, if that's the way they decide to go, if Tommy Fitzgerald, stays in that role, that he will get this done over time. But the problem for Devils fans is they look across the river and they see where the Rangers are, and the Rangers just have been able to accelerate that rebuild because of the addition of Panarin, the emergence of Zibanejad as someone who's taken it to another level, and then the good fortune in the lottery of getting a couple of really high-end players, and now the arrival of Kravtsov and the emergence of Fox. I mean, Fox kind of found, he kind of forced his way to the Rangers over time because he was originally a Calgary pick. They knew that it was unlikely they were going to sign him. They traded him to Carolina. His rights, he basically told Carolina, listen, you can keep me if you want, but I'll just go back to Harvard for another year, and when I'm done at Harvard after my 4 years, I have my CBA right to be an unrestricted free agent, and I'm going to do that, and I'll probably sign with the Rangers. So you can either work out a deal with them or let it play out, and they did the wise thing, which is to work out a deal. So, so if you're a Devil fan, you look across the river and you're frustrated maybe at that. But the Devils, I think, have several things to hang their hat on, and I think they just have to continue to be patient. That's unfortunately the nature of this.
Yeah.
Of course, and, they won 3 cups in a run of 10 years, and they got to another final in 2012, and, the Detroit Red Wings are going through something similar, and, it just takes time.
Yeah, I like Sharangovich. I like Kuokkanen. I like Smith. There's a lot to like. They're still very, very young. As you mentioned, Hischier and Hughes, I think, are going to be really good players. My major concern, though, would be in goal. Like, I don't know what Mackenzie Blackwood is. There are times where you feel real good about him. There's times where you're really not sure because, let's face it, we could talk about Lou Lamoriello. We could talk about Niedermeyer. We could talk about Stevens and Eliash and all the players that helped them win those cups. It really helped to have Marty Brodeur between the pipes, right? And at the end of the day, if the Rangers make it, it's probably going to be on the back of Shesterkin, just like it was with Lundqvist. So they've got to figure out if Blackwood is the goaltender. At times it looks like he is. At times you're not sure. So that would probably be a concern for me if I'm a Devil fan, is that do they have the goalie?
Yeah, I mean, I like Blackwood. I think he got off to a terrific start. He ended up getting, having to deal with COVID, and I think it really impacted him. I don't think there was any question. He was not kind of the same goalie after that, but he's played better in recent weeks. And, I think, goalies kind of go up and down a little bit. We see it with the best of them. I mean, I think you look at Connor Hellebuck. He won the Vezina Trophy last year. The season before that, he struggled. The season before that, he was very good.
Yeah.
So I think, he's a young goalie. He's playing in a tough spot. The team is they don't always defend as well as, you'd like to, but that's part of having a rebuilding group. So I like Mackenzie Blackwood a lot. I think they'll have to figure out, what they're going to do in terms of another goaltender there to be with him. But, I think right now Mackenzie Blackwood has shown us enough to think that he would be somebody that I think could really help this group moving forward and can be their guy.
All right, one more quick. Chris says, hey, guys, per Nick Kyprios and local reporters, Fletcher looking to move Nolan Patrick before the deadline. Do you see him being moved during the offseason?
that's going to be a tough one. You know, I think that, you know, with he's had the injury issues. He's such a high pick. I mean, you know, you have a second overall pick. It is really difficult to decide to give up on that player. But he has had a lot of injury issues. He had some injury issues prior to being drafted. And, you know, this is just something that internally the Flyers are going to have to think about. I don't know what the market is, really, for a player who has played so infrequently and has struggled to kind of find footing for himself in the NHL. Now, there will be some that would tell you, and if there's somebody out there, if there's teams that really like Nolan Patrick and think he's got upside still, this is the time to go get him, right? Because the market value is lower than it would be if he had been playing really well. But, you know, I'd be hard-pressed to think of how much I want to give up to get him based on his history. And if I'm the Philadelphia Flyers, you know, I that's a real tough one because, again, it's not like he's just been a bad player. He has had some significant health and injury issues that have put him in a position not to be able to perform to the level that he and they had hoped. So that's one of a number of tough decisions that Chuck Fletcher is going to have to deal with in the offseason.
EJ, thank you so much. This is a lot of fun. We'll talk to you next Monday.
All right, you got it, my friend. Have a great week.
All right, that's the great EJ Raddick. Watch him on NHL Now between the hours of 4 and 6 Eastern Time on the NHL Network. Always good to talk to him. Bunch of games tonight of major importance. Lightning and the Hurricanes, 7 o'clock faceoff tonight. That's a battle for first place in the Central. Carolina has 62 points, and they've got right now a 2-point lead on Tampa, who's in third. That's the logjam that we have here in the Central. Carolina with 62 points, Florida with 61, Tampa with 60. Florida's played 45 games, Carolina 43, Tampa 44. So that puts Carolina in a pretty big spot, and they've got a chance to really add to their lead tonight against Tampa. Also in that Central Division, the Blackhawks and the Predators tonight at 8 o'clock. Nashville's kind of cooled off. They've lost a couple in a row. They've got the fourth spot at 49. Chicago is 2 points back, 47, with a game in hand. So if Chicago can win this game in regulation, they'd be tied with Nashville, but because they played one less game, they would move into fourth place. So that's a pretty big game. At 9 o'clock tonight, the Coyotes and the Wild, that's a big game for the Coyotes. They sit in fourth place in the West, just 1 point ahead of St. Louis. St. Louis has got 2 games in hand on Arizona, and the Blues, you know, they can really get a chance to make up some ground here as they've got the off night tonight, and then St. Louis will be in action tomorrow, or actually will not be in action tomorrow because that game has been postponed with Colorado dealing with the COVID situation. So St. Louis kind of lurking and waiting in the wings for what's going to happen there. The Dallas Stars got a chance tonight. They're playing host to the Detroit Red Wings. And Dallas right now, they sit with 46 points, 3 points back of Nashville, with 3 games in hand on the Predators. So if Dallas can beat Detroit, which is a distinct possibility, now that puts Dallas in a situation where they would just be 1 point back in Nashville, and they'd have still the 3 games in hand with Nashville playing tonight and Chicago. So those are the 3 teams. Columbus and Detroit are pretty much done. So still Chicago and Dallas outside looking in. And again, the goal difference, plus 13 for Dallas, the only team in that division that's got a plus goal differential that is right now not in the playoffs, but they're going to be able to make up that ground with the games in hand. And as we mentioned, some history in Vegas tonight with the Sharks taking on the Golden Knights, and Patrick Marleau expected to play, and he would break Gordie Howe's record for games played. That would happen tonight. So there's a lot to get into. We'll be back with you on Wednesday to recap it all, get closer and closer to the end of the season. We'll get an update on how Vancouver's doing now that they're back to playing after COVID. What's the latest with Colorado? Are they going to be able to get back to work as well with those 3 games being postponed? You want to get in touch with me, best way to do it, at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. Back with you on Wednesday. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.